Hi, I'm Don Genova, and you're listening to a podcast recorded in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, called All You Can Eat. This is volume number 23 of All You Can Eat, and I'd just like to remind you that All You Can Eat is part of the Culinary Podcast Network, as if there could be any other network to which a food podcast should belong. As we move into fall, the weather has already cooled off quite a bit here in Vancouver. The last of my figs are off the tree. The rain is destroying my tomato plants. However, my quince have yet to be harvested. Recipes are requested. But I'm not quite ready to give up on summer, so I want to take you back a few weeks to my visit to Avery Island, Louisiana. What's so hot about Avery Island? Well, that is the place where Tabasco sauce has been made since 1868. Yeah, we're talking history here. First up, my Food for Thought documentary on Avery Island, and then some full-length interviews with a couple of the people you'll hear in the documentary.
I live, I always live with a little Tabasco.
That's from 1956. It's a 45 RPM record that we put out to promote Tabasco, obviously. That's just one of several jingles that we have.
Sauce that's hot, you add it to a thing that's not.
These are Tabasco infringements from about 100 years ago. These are bottles of Tabasco sauce, so-called Tabasco sauce, made by companies with whom we were in competition. These were all counterfeit.
That's Dr. Shane Bernard. He's an historian and the curator of anything that has to do with Tabasco sauce. The collection fills a large room in the building that used to house the first Tabasco factory on Avery Island, Louisiana. My visit there included a chat with Tony Simmons, executive vice president of McElhenney Company, and the great-great-grandson of the company founder.
When Edmund created a company in 1868 and shipped his first bottles of Tabasco to New Orleans in 1869, it created the hot sauce industry. So we started the business. We're still in the business, and it's still our major business. We're still a family-owned and family-operated company, and we hope to stay that way.
Tabasco is not just a generic name for hot sauce.
Unfortunately, some people tend to think of all hot sauce as Tabasco, which it's not, because most hot sauces are made with cayenne pepper. Tabasco is a unique pepper. It's a different pepper from the cayenne pepper, and it's much hotter. And one of the reasons people say, well, your product is so much thinner than most of the hot sauces I see, we tell them the truth. That's correct, because if we left the amount of ground-up peppers in the solids that you leave and you see in a normal cayenne hot sauce, Tabasco would be so hot most people couldn't eat it.
Anyway, we get the pepper mash in. We put it into this hopper. This hopper pumps the pepper mash into the white oak barrels, which we have.
McElhenney Company's George Segura is showing me the oak barrels where the Tabasco peppers are fermented for 3 years before the filtered sauce is bottled. The company now grows Tabasco peppers all around the world, although the original pepper plantation on Avery Island is still an important part of the process.
We have family members that will go into the pepper fields during a certain part of the growing season, and they will inspect the different pepper plants. And they'll designate that particular plant as a chosen plant. The pepper pickers will go behind the family member, pick peppers from just that plant, and then we'll take the seeds, we'll extract the seeds from that plant, put them under lock and key in a vault that we have on Avery Island, and then we use those seeds for next year's crop.
In the warehouse, there are hundreds and hundreds of barrels stacked wall to wall, nearly to the ceiling. They've all been filled with mashed up peppers and sealed with salt. In the warehouse workshop, I meet Hamilton Polk, the master cooper who keeps the aging barrels in good repair.
You must know some of these barrels very well, though.
Yes, some of these barrels are 90 to 100 years old, yes.
And how did you learn how to do all this stuff?
I learned this from Bear Barrio, which his daddy taught him, Mr. Bing Barrio. And this is, I've been here 35 years doing this, and now I'm teaching others how to do it.
You don't want to break the cover or the lid, so you have to make sure
Hamilton opened up one of the barrels they had just received from a whiskey maker and invited me to take a whiff. I stuck my nose in a little too far, and the powerful punch of the whiskey nearly made me pass out.
The aroma's going to get pretty doggone strong in here.
I can smell it already.
So if it does get overpowering, let me know.
Now George was taking me into the warehouse where the fermented Tabasco peppers are mixed with vinegar for the next step in the manufacturing process. Huge vats holding 1,800 gallons each actually give off heat from the fermentation, and the earthy aroma is heady but not quite overpowering. This is the bottling plant, where over 600,000 bottles of Tabasco sauce can be filled each day. And at a smaller line, tiny bottles of Tabasco are specially labeled.
This one right here was a request from President George W. Bush. Yeah, so he has his own personalized label when it comes to Tabasco sauce.
Right, it's got the seal of the President of the United States of America on there.
Pretty neat,
awesome,
eh?
Yeah.
So we have a good customer in here.
It's hard to summarize all the highlights I experienced on my trip to Avery Island. I heard three different stories of how Edmund McIlhenny discovered the peppers he used to make the sauce. Even historian Shane Bernard doesn't have the answer to that one, although he does have McIlhenny's original handwritten recipe for Tabasco sauce and a rare 100-year-old bottle of Tabasco that he wouldn't even have thought existed.
And here, this fellow finds in his attic in upstate New York an unopened bottle of Tabasco in a box full of garbage. And because it was in complete darkness for a century, the sauce didn't change color. It looks perfectly edible, really.
You're not going to open it up, though, are you?
No. We thought about inserting a syringe through the cork top and extracting some to analyze it and see how hot it was and that sort of thing. But then we voted against that because we just don't want to risk ruining the contents.
You might be able to see that bottle in a Tabasco museum the company hopes to open soon in New Orleans. That's Food for Thought. I'm Don Genova.
Like vintage wine, nothing fine like the genuine. There's only one Tabasco.
You're listening to All You Can Eat on the Culinary Podcast Network. I'm Don Genova. Next up, my interview with Tony Simmons, the executive vice president of McIlhenny Company and a direct descendant of the inventor of Tabasco sauce.
I'm the great-great-grandson of Edmund McIlhenny, who created Tabasco in the early 1860s.
So there's lots of history behind here. I'm going to talk to the historian later, but can you give me a sense of where Tabasco's kind of place in the world is when it comes to hot sauces?
We do have lots of history, Don. We invented the category when Edmund created a company in 1868 and shipped his first bottles of Tabasco to New Orleans in 1869. It created the hot sauce industry. So we started the business. We're still in the business, and it's still our major business. We're still a family-owned and family-operated company, and we hope to stay that way.
But hot sauce is a very competitive business now, isn't it?
It's always been a competitive business. The various people tried to create hot sauces that they called Tabasco or traded on our trade dress in the early part of the 20th century. We were involved in a good bit of litigation over protecting the word Tabasco as a product. Unfortunately, some people tend to think of all hot sauces Tabasco, which it's not, because most hot sauces are made with cayenne pepper. Tabasco is a unique pepper. It's a different pepper from the cayenne pepper, and it's much hotter. And one of the reasons people say, well, your product is so much thinner than most of the hot sauces I see, we tell them the truth. That's correct, because if we left the amount of ground-up peppers in the solids that you leave and you see in a normal cayenne hot sauce, Tabasco would be so hot most people couldn't eat it.
Nonetheless, though, you've kind of expanded from just the Tabasco pepper, right?
Yes, we have. Starting in 1994, we created a green sauce using a jalapeno pepper. We also have created a habanero sauce, which is primarily habanero pepper-based. We have a chipotle sauce, which uses a chipotle pepper as its primary ingredient. We have a garlic sauce, which is more of a cayenne-based sauce. It does have some Tabasco pepper in it, But the primary pepper in it is a cayenne sauce or a cayenne pepper. And we also have a new sauce that we're testing in seven test markets right now called Sweet and Spicy, which is a thicker, fairly mild sauce for us, primarily to use for, say, dipping fried foods or pot stickers or egg rolls or something like that.
Can you tell me a bit about when you were growing up and whether you had a sense of the family that you've been born into?
I grew up in New Orleans, but we spent all of our summers here. So once school was out in New Orleans, I would move to Avery Island to spend the summer. As a young man, the man who ran Avery Island was one of my cousins, Walter McElhenney, who, after returning from the Marine Corps in the Second World War, took over the company and ran it from 1945 until his death in 1985. Walter had never married, and one of the things he used to do was invite his young cousins, such as myself, to live with him in the summertime. So as a boy from 13 through 18 years old, I would spend my summers living in Walter McElhenney's house here on Avery Island and sort of being instilled with the culture of the company and the family. This company is very ingrained into this family. You know, the family identifies very much, possibly because of Avery Island. You know, we're not just a factory in the middle of a city somewhere. Tabasco, all Tabasco in the world is made right here at Avery Island, Louisiana, and bottled here. So the family is very, very connected to this island because it's not just our place of business, it's also our home and our ancestral home.
And did you know from that time when you came here in the summers that you would be working in the company and get to this height?
No, I had no idea. We have about, I think, 150 or so shareholders, but we really only have three family members actively involved in the business day to day. My cousin Paul McElhenney is president. I'm executive vice president, and my cousin Harold Osborne, who we call Took, is our vice president of agriculture. So we don't have a large family contingent in the business. The board of directors is all family, and they tend to put in two or three family members in the top positions. But our model over the last 138 years has been to only have two or three family members in the business. So, no, I had no idea I would end up here. As a matter of fact, I was in the heavy equipment business for 26 years before I came back home to work for the family.
Quite a homecoming, I guess.
It was fun. It's nice to come home again. I was gone for 26 years, so it's very much it's very enjoyable for me to be home and to be living here at Avery Island and to be involved with our family business.
I guess you must have to do a certain amount of planning for the future. I know you were talking about keeping it mostly to the hot sauce business. Is that kind of the straight and narrow road to follow, you think?
We, as you will see, I think, as you tour our facilities, stay up to date in our technology, in our packaging methods, and what we're doing and how we're doing it. We do not change the basic premise of how we make Tabasco in that we grow our pepper from our own seed, which is the seed from the plants that Edmund produced over 138 years ago. Nobody else does what we do in terms of aging mash prior to its use. It changes the product, and it makes a better product, and that part doesn't change. We know what we are in terms of being a pepper sauce manufacturer and enlivening the flavor of food. If we see opportunities that we believe would be good opportunities for us to expand in some other direction in the future, I'm sure we'd consider it, but we'll probably stay home for a while.
Thanks for your time.
You're very welcome. Thanks for coming to visit us here.
That was Tony Simmons, Executive Vice President of the McElhenney Company. I think the person who has one of the most interesting jobs on Avery Island is Dr. Shane Bernard, the official McElhenney Company historian and curator of a fascinating collection of Tabasco paraphernalia. Although he knows almost everything there is to know about Tabasco, there's still one question that has had him stumped for years.
Now, where did the original Tabasco peppers come from?
We actually aren't sure. when I first came here in 1993 and began investigating the company's history, it was sort of taken for granted that Tabasco peppers had been given to Edmund McElhenney, our founder, in New Orleans in the antebellum period around 1850. And what I found is that the early members of the McElhenney family themselves weren't sure where Tabasco peppers came from, and there were really two competing theories. One was an antebellum theory, and one was a postbellum theory, and they had some common elements, that the man who gave Edmund the peppers was a soldier, that he had just come from Mexico, but one half of the family seemed to say that he was a Mexican-American War veteran who bumped into Edmund around 1850. The other half of the family seemed to say that he was a Confederate soldier who had fled to Mexico rather than surrender to the North, came back about a year later to take the oath of allegiance to the United States, ran into Edmund in the street in New Orleans and said, here are some peppers that I found in Mexico. Edmund liked them so much, he planted them back here on Avery Island and eventually bottled the peppers and in doing so created Tabasco pepper sauce. Which version is true, I really don't know. I used to lean toward the post-Civil War story. But recently I found some evidence that suggests it was before or even during the war that he got the peppers. So I'm undecided. I wish I knew, but I don't.
And this was something that he did because he couldn't find work otherwise.
That's right. Edmund McElhenney had been a banker before the Civil War and had worked his way up from being a bookkeeper to being an independent bank owner. And the Civil War completely wiped out his banking business. Of the five bank buildings that he owned, three were in towns that were either wholly or partly destroyed by Union troops. It really didn't matter anyway because no one had any money to pay anyone anyway after the Civil War in the South. And he complains about this in his letters. He was being sued by his creditors. He was virtually bankrupt. And somehow out of this desperate situation, he came up with the idea, why don't I make a pepper sauce and sell it? And I'm not even sure how that happened, really. He never wrote down the early story of Tabasco. So we only have the memories of his children and grandchildren to go by. But as I mentioned, they don't even agree on the specifics themselves. Some of it can be put back together through historical documents. And it is sort of a stranger than fiction story because, I mean, especially since we were out here in the middle of nowhere, it's not like we were in New Orleans or some major industrial hub. It took 5 days to get Tabasco to market back then, around 1870, and it went to New Orleans, went to market in New Orleans via horse and buggy, or wagon rather, and then steamboat, down the Bayou Teche, across Vermilion Bay, up Bayou Plaquemine, which comes out below Baton Rouge on the Mississippi River, then down the Mississippi River to New Orleans. And by the time it got there, you know, the product may have spoiled in the sweltering hold of a steamship, or it may have been broken when someone dropped a crate or something like that. So it was a real problem just getting Tabasco to a major market like New Orleans.
But at the time, people didn't really use hot sauces. It was kind of a modern invention, right?
Well, hot peppers were popular in New Orleans. I don't know how popular they were elsewhere in the South or in the U.S. I suspect not very much. When, for example, Tabasco sauce was introduced to St. Louis, Missouri, one of the grocers there suggested that Edmund water down the condiment because it was too hot. Fortunately, Edmund didn't listen to the guy. But the reason this grocer said that is that a local customer at an oyster saloon had, he thought it was sort of like ketchup. And so he poured quite a bit of Tabasco on his oysters and then thought someone had played a practical joke on him, threw the bottle down on the floor and threatened to fight the whole establishment. And, this is one of these historical letters that we have in our collection. And by the way, I should point out that on our early bottles, we actually had a label on the back that said, caution, one or two drops is enough for a plate of soup or stew. So that was the only step that Edmund took to alert the uninitiated about the potency of Tabasco sauce. But I've got all kinds of stuff here having to do with Tabasco sauce, directly or indirectly. Everything from early cork-top Tabasco bottles to the original Tabasco sauce recipe to comic books from the 1950s that mention Tabasco to clips from TVs, movies, well, albums that mention Tabasco sauce, just anything and everything having to do with our product.
And you were lucky that McElhenney was a banker before he became a Tabasco sauce maker.
Well, he learned to keep meticulous records, and he impressed this upon his children. In fact, he and his wife repeatedly write to their children, keep your personal letters, because at the end of your life you'll have a complete record of your activities. And one thing that I'm doing now as part of modernizing the way we do things around here, I'm digitizing the family letters from the early days, and we're not finished yet, and we already have almost 9,000 pages of handwritten letters scanned. And, you know, that might not be unusual for an archives, but what is unusual is that these letters belong to one family. I think it is very unusual for one family to have kept so much material.
What's the artifact that you're most excited about or most proud of having here?
The two most important artifacts we have are the handwritten recipe for Tabasco and Edmund's on hand, and an early bottle of Tabasco sauce that not only still has the label on the bottle, both front and back label, but it still has the sauce inside. It still has the cork top and the metallic seal over it. And we were really surprised to find that, because if you had asked me the day before what would be the item I'd most like to find, it would be an empty Tabasco bottle with just the front label on it. And we didn't have one like that. A cork top Tabasco bottle with the label still on it. And here, this fellow finds in his attic in upstate New York an unopened bottle of Tabasco in a box full of garbage. The only thing we can figure is that somebody bought this bottle 100 years ago or more, accidentally knocked it into this box of garbage, put the box of garbage in the attic, and because it was in complete darkness for a century, the sauce didn't change color, so it's still a red, sort of a reddish brown, much like our Chipotle sauce that we have now. It looks perfectly edible, really. And
you're not going to open it up, though, are you?
No. We thought about inserting a syringe through the cork top and extracting some to analyze it and see how hot it was and that sort of thing. But then we voted against that because we just don't want to risk ruining the contents.
I was going to ask you that those two items, you said that that unopened bottle of Tabasco sauce was the thing that you wanted. Is there another thing that you want now?
Well, I don't even know if this exists, but I would hope somewhere there's a letter in Edmund McElhenney's handwriting explaining where the peppers came from and how he got this idea of making a pepper sauce. I do know that someone wrote to him, because we have the letter, asking him that question. I just don't know what if he actually answered the guy. The guy's name was Holiday. He was out in San Francisco. I remember that. And I would very much like to know. He was a doctor. I remember that. Dr. Holiday in San Francisco. And he asked Edmund, how did you come up with this idea? And I briefly searched for in archives that might have his papers, but I had no luck. So who knows? Floating around out there might be an explanation. You know, I've even found, I found 9 of Edmund's letters in Oxford University's archives. So you never know where this stuff's going to turn up, on the other side of the world or right up the street.
That's Dr. Shane Bernard, historian and curator at Avery Island. And that's the last part of my visit to Avery Island. And now that I've got Louisiana out of my system, I guess it is time to turn to the fall grab bag of recipes. but I do have a tree full of quince. So if you have any quince recipes you'd like to share, just go to my website, dongenova.com, and send me a note. That's all for this edition of All You Can Eat. And remember, only buy your spinach from someone you trust. I'm Don Genova. Bye for now.